what I want to know right now is I want to know on a scale 1 to 10, 1 being you can't get out of bed and you're nearly dead, and 10 being feeling unstoppable, where do you usually operate on a scale 1 to 10? Think about that and think hard on your answer. Because if you're at a 3 or a 5, how do you expect to get shit done when you need to get it done and have energy left over for your wife, your husband, your children, your dreams, your goals, the things outside of work that you want to accomplish, all those things? It's just not going to happen. And how are you, if you're a business owner or CEO, how are you going to inspire your employees? Or if you're a mom or dad, how are you going to inspire your kids? How are you going to inspire anyone who looks up to you when you want them to get something done? What's up, my friend, and welcome back to another episode of the Legendary Life Podcast. I'm your host, celebrity trainer, and high-performance health coach, Ted Rice. This is a podcast for men and women who are looking to boost their energy and upgrade their health. So get ready to learn proven health, fitness, and mindset strategies to unlock your full potential. And before I get into today's episode, which is on how to control your mind and emotional state, I just want to give a shout out to everybody who gave me some feedback about these new episodes that I've been doing. I know I've gone down a rabbit hole for a while where I was, you know, 7 ways that collagen protein can affect your health. And I started to realize that maybe that isn't the best information. Maybe that isn't what you come to this show to listen to. And I learned that from listening to people. And every time someone said, oh man, your show changed my life, it wasn't because I did 6 ways to build muscle faster. It was all about me sharing some personal development, some self-help, if you will. So I want to thank you for giving me the feedback and letting me know that these recent episodes really have you going, have you motivated, have you hyped up. And in fact, someone said, thank you so much for all the work on the mindset. I believe that the obesity epidemic is in large part due to our mindset. And I agree 100%. Sometimes I get lost in the details of, oh, well, this is what you need to do to get in shape. Here are the 5 things. And if you just do this, then you're good. But the problem is people aren't doing those. So we're going to be talking about that a lot more today, how to control your mind and emotional state, because this is super important stuff. Before I launch into all of that great info, I also want to say, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, because this is your first time listening to the podcast, make sure you go and subscribe to wherever you're listening to this on iTunes, Stitcher, there's so many podcast apps and platforms right now. Click that subscribe button so every time one of my episodes goes live, you'll be the first to know. The other thing I got to tell you is that I put together a brand new training. This is by far the best training I've ever done. For one, it's shorter. My last one was like 2 hours. And so this is about an hour of your time. And I really cut down on the amount of things I was telling you. I really got a lot of clarity. Like, what do people really need to do to rein in their health, their life, make a change in their body, and have that ripple effect that happens when, well, like you hear from our success stories, like Tim, Art, Kevin, Todd, Deanne, Sarah, their whole lives change as a result. So if you want that information for free, go to legendarylifepodcast.com/free. That's legendarylifepodcast.com/free. So let's get into it. How to control your mind and your emotional state. And what I want to posit to you is that everything we do is for one reason, and one reason only. We want to change how we feel. You don't agree with me? Think about it for a moment. Do you really want more money? Do you really want more paper with presidents' faces printed on it, or numbers on some website that a bunch of numbers in your account? No, that's really abstract stuff. What you really want is the things that that money will give you. You want to feel, oh, well, I have freedom. I can pay my bills. I'm not stressed because I can pay my bills. I have money. I can go on vacation. Why is not being stressed good? Well, I can sleep at night. I'm not going to feel terrible. I'm not going to be irritable and snap at people on the road because I don't have enough money. Get out of my way. And when you have money to go on vacation, you're like, oh God, you know, you're doing things, whether it's buying a new suit or a new dress or purse or car or house or going on vacation, you do those things because you believe they're going to make you feel better. In fact, everything's like that. Why do we want to lose weight? Is it because you look down at the scale and you see that number is lower than it was before? And you're like, oh, that's good. That's lower. No, it's because you feel better. You feel better. You think it's going to make you feel better. And usually it does, by the way, when you lose that excess body fat. Or even in relationships, everything is all about making us feel better. And if you don't believe me, challenge me on this. Try to think of an exception where this isn't true. Human beings are complex, but we're pretty simple when it comes to why we do what we do. We want to create pleasure and we want to avoid pain. And sometimes some people get those crossed up and it can lead to some pretty freaky stuff. But for the most part, it's pretty straightforward. We want to create pleasure in our lives. We want to avoid pain. Why do we want to watch that show on Netflix? Why do we want to eat that yummy, delicious dessert? It gives us pleasure to do that. Why do we make sure we get to work on time and, you know, drive crazy and, you know, what some of the other things that we do? We want to avoid pain. So let me ask you this. Haven't you had that experience where you did something really dumb where you should have known better? Yeah, of course not, right? Yeah, I've done so many dumb things. It would be hard to list them all. It would take multiple hour-long podcast episodes to list all the dumb things that I've done. And I'm guessing you have a similar story. And haven't you also had the experience of being in a flow state where everything feels effortless and your days just go smoothly? Well, I've got a question for you. What's the difference between those times where your day goes so amazingly well and then those brutal days that you just can't wait until they're over, where you're just like, oh God, today sucked. Why don't I just can't wait to go to bed tonight and just wake up and just start the day over. What's the difference? And the answer isn't your talent. It's the state of mind you are in. And now some of you may say, well, you know, a lot of bad things happened to me that day. Well, we're going to get into that. Is it really the things that happened to you or the way you're reacting to it? So what I want to tell you, my friends, is if you don't learn how to manage your emotional state, it's going to cost you virtually everything in your life. Friends, family, success, and just the joy that you want to experience on a day-to-day basis. It's so important to learn how to do this because it's in your power. So I've got another question for you. And this is something I just alluded to earlier. Is what happens in your life the thing that determines how you feel at any moment in time? Yes or no? For example, if you're a Trump supporter, does it really piss you off and really get you in a bad mood if someone said something really bad about Trump, or the media maybe took something out of context or reported something that wasn't really that accurate about something he said or did? Or if you're on the other side and you hate Trump, and I'm using politics because it seems everybody is in a bad mood because of politics these days. So if you hate Trump and you're like, oh, I can't believe you said Trump supporters, you know? And if you hate Trump and you hate Trump supporters, does listening to something positive about him or something that he did and he's being praised for it affects whether you feel good or not? And to bring it to something maybe a little less controversial, how about your drive to work? Does it matter whether someone cuts you off on the way to work today? Or whether the traffic was smooth or not? Does that determine how you feel? Or what about the weather? Maybe it's a bit rainy where you are. Maybe the sun hasn't come out in a while, even though it's summer right now in the United States. Or maybe someone treated you bad. And I'm here to tell you no. And I'm not saying that our external circumstances, the things that happen to us throughout our day, don't have an effect on us. But what I'm talking about is your ultimate state of mind. Because what it really comes down to is how you're directing your mind and body at any given point in time. What do I mean by that? Well, what I'm saying is that no matter what happens to you, you are in control of your own emotional state. Now, some of you are like, no, I'm totally not. I'm freaking out when something goes wrong. Maybe you see someone say something on Facebook where I spend some time, or Twitter, which is even worse. Someone may say something, you get triggered by it and you blame it on that person. And then you get into this back and forth that lasts for maybe minutes or even hours. And you blame that person for it because they said that thing that triggered you. And what I'm here to tell you is that's bullshit. Now, those things, again, like I said, it affects us. If everybody's treating us bad throughout our day, then of course it's going to have an effect on you. If people are saying things you don't like, or, you know, it's raining, people cut you off, you know, your boss says something nasty to you, or maybe your employees are just acting terribly today. They're all on Facebook arguing about Trump or perhaps the ketogenic diet. If you're not into politics, maybe you're arguing about nutrition. And what I'm saying is you are in control. And if you don't believe that, then that's a real problem. But what I'm here to tell you is that you, maybe even to those people who are skeptical, and I hope you're not that skeptical because you've been listening to the show for a while and you've heard the amazing guests that have come on, as well as my own work and episodes trying to help you with this. But we have two different areas of cognitive control, if you will. And I talked about this in some of the recent episodes. There's two different types of cognitive control. We have our hot cognition, which is that part of you that reacts instinctively. For example, if you're about to step out onto a road and a car immediately, let's say it runs a red light and it's your turn to walk across a crosswalk, and that part of you, you just jump back because the car is coming. You didn't have to say, that car is running the red light and it's moving at a fast velocity and I'm calculating the distance and time I have to set. You don't do that. You just move quick. Okay, if you're walking with your child and there's some danger, maybe there's a snake in the grass. I don't know where you're at. Maybe you're hiking or something and you see a snake in the grass, or some other, or maybe an aggressive dog. You instinctively block your child and protect them from going forward. And this is the part of us that has kept us alive for millions of years through our hunter-gatherer stage, where we didn't have the good fortune to have the abundance of food and the shelter and the safety that we all enjoy in modern society. And it's also the part of you that reacts poorly to say, oh, look, there's a superfood salad with some kale and spinach and other greens that I don't even know the names of, but I know there's, you know, it's good for me. But ooh, look at that pizza covered in cheese and it's oily and it's got pepperoni on it. Or my favorite is I had some amazing pizza in Vietnam at Four Piece Pizza. If you're ever in Saigon, go to Four Piece Pizza, and they make this incredible pizza and they put burrata cheese on it. They make this incredible homemade burrata cheese and put it on the pizza. It is just one of the most amazing things. It is actually the best pizza I've ever had. And I've had a lot of pizza at luxury places. I've eaten pizza in New York. I have not been to Chicago. I hear that's pretty good over there too. But anyway, they put this incredible cheese on it. And why is it that you want to eat the pizza, or you end up rather eating the pizza when you know it tastes better, but you know it's not as good for you? And the answer has to do with this hot cognition. It's because of your, it's hardwired into you. You know that pizza is going to be a big payoff. You're going to take a bite and you're going to bite into that, that amazing crust that's crispy and but chewy on the inside, crispy on the outside, and that amazing homemade cheese in the case of the pizza I'm talking about, which I haven't had any in a while. I'm eating Thai food mostly, if you didn't imagine, over here in Chiang Mai, Thailand, where Giselle and I are right now. But you know it's going to be this huge payoff, but you also know, hey, that's going to make me take a step back, or perhaps you're drinking too much alcohol. And we're going to get into all that. So that's your hot cognition. It's also the thing that if someone cuts you off, you want to bop them over the head. You want to get out of the car. You want to grab them. You want to shake them and cuss them out. At least that's what I want to do when I was in Miami anyway. And this is our hot cognition. It's this knee-jerk reaction that we have to things, this emotional reaction. And the reason it's called hot is because it's very frugal. It doesn't take much energy. It just sort of happens, right? You're reading something on your Facebook, you're scrolling through your Facebook feed or Instagram feed, and you see something that you either, ooh, look at that. You know, maybe it's a very attractive woman or man, whatever you're into, or maybe it's something like a political argument on Facebook, and it just triggers you. And then you have your cold cognition, which is the place of your consciousness. It is the place of your core values, what you believe about the world, what you believe about yourself, at least what you say you believe. It's also the seat of our language, right? So that's why it's considered the rational part of who you are. And it's kind of interesting because what we're going to be talking about here, and I'm going to do a lot more on this, but I want you to know this. If you feel a bit out of control, I'm going to give you some tactics, some strategies, some things that you can do today to start to get more leverage over your emotional state and how to control your mind more. But what I want you to know, because I believe a lot of us, at least a lot of us in the West, in say America, for example, or even the UK, Canada, Australia, all these places in Europe, you kind of have this feeling. And I think this is especially prevalent. This way of thinking is especially prevalent in America because we're such a young country and we've accomplished so much and we're a bit detached from our past, right? You hear all those people who are like, yeah, we're Americans. We gotta, you know, keep the immigrants out. Well, it's like, well, how many generations do you go back in America? And the answer is not many, but most of us don't know that because we only know our grandparents, maybe our great grandparents. And that's certainly the case for me. I knew my grandparents, have no idea who my great grandparents were. And I only knew my grandparents on my dad's side. I never met my mom's grandparents. And that's a story for another podcast. But what I'm getting at is we believe that we're such rugged individualists. We believe that we stand on our own, that we're our own person, and that we're living this new life, this new way of being. And how am I going to figure out all these new questions and problems and things that I'm up against in the world when the truth is that this problem in particular, this hot versus cold cognition, or why can't I get myself up in the morning? And it's like, what do you mean? Who is the self that you're talking about if it isn't you? What do you mean can't get yourself up? And we all understand there's like this duality in our bodies, right? We want to do something, but then another part doesn't let us because we're not motivated. What does that even, you know, mean? So what I'm trying to tell you here is this hot versus cold cognition, which is what, you know, it's called system one, system two, top down, bottom up. But again, I love hot versus cold cognition, which I believe cognitive psychologists use that term, neuroscientists like Adam Ghazali, who I've had on here. He talks about top down, bottom up. But this talk, even though it's been more recently elucidated and explained with neuroscience, it's been going on for a long time. In fact, 2,000 years ago, like I've talked about recently, you know, ancient Chinese were trying to figure this very question out. And Freud wrote an entire book, Sigmund Freud, the Austrian psychologist who gave way to psychoanalysis and the whole psychodynamic, you know, therapy. He wrote an entire book about civilization and its discontents, meaning we gain a lot from living in society, from living in civilization, right? We don't have to hunt and gather for our food. We go to Whole Foods now and get our smoothies and our, you know, grass-fed beef and organic kale. We don't have to really worry about shelter if we make enough money, right? And even if you don't make enough money, at least in America and other places in the world, it ain't like this, but you'll have a place to stay. There are homeless shelters. I mean, there's so much that civilization offers us, but at the same time, there's a lot of these urges that come up in us. And Freud believed we had to sublimate them. So we can't just beat someone over the head when we're angry with them. We can't just have sex with whoever we want to because we find them attractive. We can't just take someone's stuff just because we want it. We have to control these urges. And Freud actually had I'm not going to go too into this, but had a very dark view of human beings, and partly because of the time he was in and the type of situations, and probably all that cocaine he was doing wasn't helping him either, you know, that repressed Victorian time. But what I'm trying to tell you is this is a question that's been going on for a long time. So it's not new. So if you're thinking, gosh, how do we do this? This new question of how to control ourselves in society, it's been happening for thousands and thousands of years. And we have more knowledge and more tactics, strategies, tools than ever. And once you understand this and learn how to develop this ability, you'll have control over your life at a whole new level. You'll have more fun, more passion, and more joy than you've ever dreamed of once you take that control. Does that sound like a lot of work? If that's the case, let's look at the price of not managing your emotional state. For example, let's take Nicolas Cage, one of Hollywood's highest paid actors. And Nicolas Cage at one time had homes all over the world, including a castle in Germany and a haunted mansion in New Orleans, which I visited. Actually, he had sold it by that time. And there's quite a lot of stories running around New Orleans about Nicolas Cage. And most of them aren't good. In fact, one other one, just really quick, he also spent money to be buried in this cemetery, a very famous cemetery there. And not only is he going to be buried there, he has this structure. It's like a little pyramid thing. You can look it up online. It's crazy. Now, he spent money on that. And in 2009, the IRS alleged that Cage had failed to pay more than $6.2 million in federal income taxes for 2007. And Cage, he's such a crazy dude. I don't know how much you know about him or how much you like him, but he was one of the best actors around. I really liked his work. I really liked his, you know, what he brought to the screen. In his craziness, he sued his former business manager for mismanaging his money. And his homes were all foreclosed on, sold at auction. And I don't know if you know this, but he's been doing these movies that like go right to video right now. And they all have terrible reviews. I can't even bring myself to watch them because the reviews are so bad. I mean, if something has a 3-star review, maybe I can watch it and, you know, appreciate it, right? Some of the martial arts movies are like that. But with him, I just haven't been able to do it. And this was a guy who was on top of the world, but he led with his hot cognition. He had a bunch of money and he just threw it at these things like castles and haunted mansions and all these other things that he bought, a place to be buried in this famous cemetery. And he also apparently is a raging alcoholic. And so the reason I'm bringing up him in part is because he's so, not only is he someone that you know by name, you've most likely heard of him, even if you're not in America and you watch American movies, you've heard of Nicolas Cage and probably have wondered why you haven't seen him in a while. He's also wealthy and he has every means and resource at his disposal, or at least he did before he blew all his money, to get his life in order, but he didn't. And another reason why I'm bringing this up is because a lot of you listening right now think that money is your biggest issue. Oh, if I just have more money, I could solve this problem. I wouldn't struggle to pay my bills. I wouldn't, you know, I could hire a personal trainer to get in shape. I could hire Ted because he's the best. I could, you know, do all these amazing things. I wouldn't be so stressed. And that's not true. That's not true at all. In fact, the reason why you're in the life that you're in is because of the choices that you've made. You've probably made some bad choices. And again, I'm not being judgmental here because my life is full of terrible decision after terrible decision. I just finally made the switch over and started making better decisions. I started learning how to do what we're talking about, controlling our emotional state and controlling our mind, and to not be like that. And I want to also give you another example of the opposite. Another famous actor, Keanu Reeves, one of my favorite actors, and loved him in John Wick, although I liked the number one better than number two, but I appreciated all the action. And Keanu's life has been full of more tragedy than you would expect from such a successful person. But despite each setback, he's kept pushing forward. And he's really the type of guy that people just love in Hollywood. He doesn't involve himself in scandals. He's not buying haunted mansions or erecting strange, I don't even know what the word's called. It's not a mausoleum, but strange like structures to be built in, strange pyramid. You know what I mean? He's not doing this stuff. And the guy had trouble in high school. His dad skipped out on him when he was like 3 years old. And they had a really tough time. He ended up not talking to his dad. He met a woman in 1998 and fell in love with her. And Jennifer Syme, I think I'm saying her last name right. And she was pregnant with their baby. And after 8 months, their child was stillborn. It was so devastated that the stillborn baby, it ended their relationship. And to add insult to injury, 18 months later, Syme would die in a car accident. And so it's a lot of tragedy in this guy's life, but he's the type of guy when the paparazzi and people film him doing stuff. I saw a video of him. He gave his seat on the subway to someone. I think he was in New York and he gave his seat away. And he's a guy who also, I forget exactly the situation, but after a movie, he got paid a bunch of, I think it was for the Matrix trilogy. And when he got paid like a crazy amount of money for it, right? You know, movie star sums. And once he found out like the special effects team was making just paled in comparison to what he was making, he split the money. He took like $30 million and split like the $50 million that was left or whatever the number was between the special effects team. And he bought some other people motorcycles. He does a lot of great stuff for people. And he's still going strong. He's in great shape. If you saw him in John Wick, he was tossing people around. He was doing jujitsu and firearms training, just an unbelievable performance. Although I didn't love the story in John Wick 2. And giving you examples, because Keanu Reeves, you could say, well, man, if he didn't, some of you don't have a dad that was in your life. Some of you maybe struggled through school. Some of you maybe had a terrible divorce, or maybe someone died. Maybe you've gone through, had a stillborn pregnancy or a miscarriage or something. I have a good friend of mine who that happened to. And then there's all these things that can go wrong in our life. But he's a person who stepped up and kept pushing forward and just understands like, hey, it's nothing personal. It's life. life keeps going. You got to keep moving forward. And he's obviously someone who's learned how to control his emotional state because he's not lost in drugs. He's still making great stuff, even at, even in his 50s, he's in good shape, doing the jujitsu, the judo, and all the other firearms craziness, martial arts, action choreography, which, wow, just if you haven't seen those John Wick movies and you're a fan of martial arts, make sure you see them because it's legit stuff. The blending of hand-to-hand combat and firearms, just incredible. I also want to share my personal story. And a lot of people, when they hear about it, in case you haven't heard it, you know, I've had a lot of tragedy in my life. My 9-year-old brother was kidnapped and murdered when I was 19 years old, sent me down a very dark road for a few years, pulled it together only to have other tragedies. My sister committed suicide and my mom died when I was 14 in a car accident. My stepmom died from a heart attack. I only have my dad left in my life. And a lot of people, when they hear that story, they're like, man, if I would think about them all the time, I would be paralyzed in my life. I wouldn't be able to do much. And I don't believe that's definitely true for some people, but it's not true for as many people as you might think. The loss really gives you perspective. And I don't mean to say, hey, like, hey, go out there and get yourself a tragedy. It'll, you know, shape your life up. It's like the best thing you can do. Don't do it. You know, and I make jokes about it because in part it helps too, right? And that's part of how I manage my state. And so what I'm trying to say here is that the things that happen to us do affect us. I did grieve all those times that I lost someone. I wasn't like, oh, someone's dead again. Oh, well, that's okay because I can control my emotional state. I wasn't like that. I went through some hard, hard times. I mean, times that you can't even begin to imagine how low, how devastated, how depressed I was. Unless you've been through something similar, especially multiple times, you start looking up and saying, why, universe? Why me? Why is this happening to me? And while maybe you can relate to my story because of what you've been through, or maybe it's just like, whoa, yeah, I know your story, Ted. It's just incredible. And I don't know what it's like to be like that at all. But what you can relate to is the tough times that we all go through. And that's something we all share. Now, some of our tough times are much different than others. But what I'm getting at here is not what happens to you, it's what you do about it. So let's get into it. How do you manage your state? And what I want to tell you is most of the battle is making the decision to get this handled. In other words, you must commit to learning how to do this and putting it into action. And I want to call you on it right now. A lot of you are committed to learning because you're listening to a podcast. I mean, come on, shouldn't you be listening to the top 40 radio, the same stupid crap songs played over and over again? I mean, that's what so many people do. They listen to things that kind of change their state, but don't really help them elevate, right? And you're doing that. But I'm guessing that you're having some trouble putting some of this stuff into action. So let's get into it. Two primary ways to control your mental state. One is through your physiology. And we're going to talk all about that today. Then I'm going to do a follow-up on the second thing, which is controlling your mental focus. And in case you're wondering what that means, it's what you pay attention to, what you think about, what you say to yourself, having a purpose, understanding why, you know, all those things. But today we're going to be focusing on your physiology. And of course, you know a ton of stuff about physiology from listening to this podcast and probably many other podcasts on health and fitness. But we're going to take a different perspective today. And what I want you to do is think about how your mental state shows up in your physical body. For example, if I said, close your eyes and don't do this if you're driving, but if you're driving or you've got a weight on you, or, you know, if you're running across, if you're running down the sidewalk and you're crossing intersections, keep your eyes open. But I want you to picture a person in your mind. Picture a person who is depressed. What does that word bring up? And think about that word expressed in a person's physiology, in their physical presence. What type of posture do they have? What type of energy level do they have? What type of expression do they have on their face? if they speak, what's the tone of their voice? How are they breathing? And when things happen to them, how do they react? And what you probably think is you think of someone who's slumped over, looking at the ground, low energy. They don't have a pleasant expression on their face. It's the type of expression where you look at them like, oh man, that person has had a bad night of sleep, or things aren't going their way. Something's not up with them. How are they dressed too? That's another good one. And when they speak, are they speaking like, hey, what's going on? I'm depressed. Or are they like, hey, yeah, I know everything's going well. Yeah. And how are they breathing? Is it deep and full and, you know, breathing in life? Or are they just kind of, you know, shallow breathing? And how do they react to things that are negative that or unpleasant situations that came up? And I don't mean big ones. I mean, just maybe someone cuts you off to work and you're like, just getting punked on the road again. You know, I'm trying to be depressed right now. Or, you know, it's the person who, like, they just react to things. And we all have people like this in our life. We all know people like this. And perhaps we've been like that in our life. I know I have. I've been this person. And I never understood how I was pushing people away before, or how I wore my emotions on my sleeve like that. But I want to ask you, why is it that when we think of depressed person that we kind of get there, if we're old enough, we have enough experience, we know all that stuff? And it's because, I'm going to argue at least, it's because we intuitively know there's some connection between a person's body language and their emotional state. And what I want to tell you is that when I was struggling in my life after some of those tragedies that I mentioned, or if you heard me talk in detail about them in the past, I had no idea about the power of my physical body. I felt like my emotions were in control of me. I felt out of control. I felt like the thing inside of me, that hot cognition, that rage, that anger, that entitlement, that feeling that, you know, why me, that why me feeling. I still use the principles, by the way, but I just use them in the wrong way. And we'll talk about that in a bit, using these principles in the wrong way, because you already know this. The thing, though, that changed everything for me is after when my little brother was kidnapped and murdered, I was really struggling to pull myself together. I dropped out of school. I could not focus in school, as you might imagine. It's like, I could not focus. I was in just a terrible place in my life, terrible mentally, terrible physically. And I was 19 years old at this time, and it just got worse. When I was 20, I had the worst time, and 21 was bad too. And I started pulling my act together towards the end of my 21st year of being alive. And when long story short, because I had a bunch of odd jobs and did some strange things and nearly went into the military, but I had this incredible epiphany that eventually led me to what my life's work is, which is health and fitness and mindset. And here's the thing, you already know this too. I mean, when you don't like the way you're feeling, what do you usually do? Well, I'll tell you what most people do is they do something to change the way they feel by changing their body. And most people like to use what we'll call biochemistry. So what am I talking about here? Oh, had a hard day at work. Let me grab a couple beers or a scotch, or let me have a glass of white wine. And why do you drink alcohol? Well, because as soon as you have that drink, your physiology changes and it changes your state. We don't need to talk about the neuroscience of what happens, or the different, you know, neurochemicals involved, the neurotransmitters involved, but it feels differently. You behave differently, right? You start to loosen up. It starts to numb you of the feelings that you were having before, not the external things that happen. Nothing outside of you changed, right? But when you had a couple of drinks, for me, I'm a cheap date. If I have half of a drink, I start feeling the effects. that's what I used to do. That was one of the things I used to do. I used to drink quite a bit. People also do drugs. In fact, you know, it's so funny. It's not funny, but it's ironic that people make such a fuss about all the drug cartels, right? And who are doing horrible things to sell cocaine, mostly to Americans, right? Mostly to Americans. We're like, oh, these savages, but you know, don't stop doing it because I got to get my cocaine. And apparently most of the cocaine is done in California. Now, don't quote me on that as a hard statistic, but that it's something that I read recently. Also, people smoke cigarettes. And let's talk about the most abused drug, quote unquote, drug around, is they eat and then they get fat and then they don't like what they see in the mirror. So they eat something more, trying to feel better about the way they feel. And they create this vicious circle that's hard to break. How about that one? Sound familiar? I bet you've been there or you know someone who has. Also, people use exercise in a damaging way. Some of you have already figured out, well, I just exercise it away. But then you get injured and then you stop. And then what happens? You feel depressed. You feel like your identity has been taken away from you. You can't use that drug anymore. So the point is that a change in your physical state, in the physical state of your body, will change how you feel. And so what you've got to do is you've got to use this to your advantage. And I learned a lot about this from, well, of course, being a fitness professional. That's what led me to this line of work, but also from being a competitive athlete, working with high performers, working with CEOs, not all of them. Some of them are complete messes, by the way. They just have a high tolerance for alcohol and shitty food. Well, I shouldn't say shitty food, expensive, but bad for you food and drinking a ton of alcohol, but also creative performances. I've learned a lot about this. I mean, in jiu-jitsu competitions, you need to be in the right state of mind before you step on the mat because you can't fully express your skills if you're in the wrong state of mind, if you're overly amped up. In fact, for my first jiu-jitsu competition, I thought I was going to not be energetic enough. So I made sure to hype myself up. And by the time it actually came down for me to compete, I took third place because I was so exhausted. I came there to win that day. Let me tell you, came there to win that day. I was taking private jiu-jitsu lessons. Another way I learned it is in my improv comedy classes and how they prepare for a show. When I was doing improv comedy classes back in Miami, we had to do a show at the end of every like 8 weeks class. And what we do before we got out, we would do these warm-ups and they were just incredible. You were already just hyped up before you stepped out on stage. What I want to know right now is I want to know on a scale 1 to 10, 1 being you can't get out of bed and you're nearly dead, and 10 being feeling unstoppable, where do you usually operate on a scale 1 to 10? Think about that and think hard on your answer. Because if you're at a 3 or a 5, how do you expect to get shit done when you need to get it done and have energy left over for your wife, your husband, your children, your dreams, your goals, the things outside of work that you want to accomplish, all those things? It's just not going to happen. And how are you, if you're a business owner or CEO, how are you going to inspire your employees? Or if you're a mom or dad, how are you going to inspire your kids? How are you going to inspire anyone who looks up to you when you want them to get something done? I mean, how many times do you hear people say, I just can't motivate my children. And I just don't understand why. I talk to them all about the reasons why they should really do their homework and get good grades. I tell them that it's important so that they go to college, but it just doesn't seem to work. Or my business, I just don't understand why my employees aren't excited to do their jobs. I can't understand why they don't respect me. I mean, I am the boss after all. I mean, come on. Really? If that's it, and I doubt you're bringing that type of energy in, but I want to ask you, what type of energy? Because if it's too low or if it's negative, right? You come in there and just beat people over the head, it's not going to work. Okay. It's not going to work. So if you got low energy or if you got negative energy, and I'm trying to motivate you right now, and we've got a lot to get through. So I'm talking a little faster and with more energy than if I was with you in person. And I'll be honest, I love doing this too. Every time I do a podcast, I get hyped up. I love doing this. But how would you feel if you had to listen to this, to hear me talk about how I'm going to inspire and motivate you? I mean, how long could you listen to that, right? Well, for example, on a scale of 1 to 10, where were you before you started listening to this episode today? And most people would probably say somewhere in the 3 to 6 range. Maybe if you're really living life and sleeping well and doing all the things you need to do, maybe you're at a 7 or 8, right? And now you're at a 9. I'm sorry, I'm jumping the gun here, but maybe you're at a 7 or 8. But how do you feel now after listening? And I don't know about you, but when I listen to something that inspires me, a podcast, an audiobook, I'm fired up. I'm at an 8 or a 9 afterward. And while I think that it's great that Legendary Life is having an impact on you where you keep coming back for more, and I appreciate you, but the truth is you don't need me. You need you. You're the one who really has the power. So with that said, let's get into some specifics before we wrap things up. Let's get into some specifics about how to change your state. And the first one is the obvious. You can change your state through your physical body. The number one way to do that is through some type of exercise. And I say exercise, but what I really mean is anything, any type of movement that gets not only your circulation up, but also starts your brain. It starts the neurons firing in your brain. It starts to create chemicals that wake you up. And it doesn't have to be push-up squats or burpees or bench presses or pull-ups. You can dance. You can run up a flight of stairs. You can go outside for a walk and get some sunshine and fresh air. It can literally be whatever you want. And I have things that I do throughout the day to get me back into the right state. One of them is doing podcast episodes or interviews. If you hear me excited, I don't always have this energy. I get low in energy too. But when I do these, this is one of my, what I call power moves that I go to pump me up. And I want you to come up with some of what, some power move too. Okay. I want you to think about, well, what gets me going? And just to give this a try, drop down and give me some burpees right now, or give me some pushups, or give me some squats. Or if you're not, you already hit your workout, try walking around the room like you're feeling strong and unstoppable. Try sitting up. If you're seated and you're listening to this in the car, try sitting up with good posture, shoulders back, straight back, neck in line with your spine, looking forward, confident, powerful, like you're owning, going, not cocky, right? You're not staring anybody down. You're just on your way. You're confident. You're certain. You're going where you need to go. And try it right now if you're in the car listening. Okay. And if you're already working out, you're already feeling this way. But try it. Try sitting up. Try sitting up straighter. If you notice that you slump a lot, try sitting up. Try stacking your head in the right place. Try holding your chin up. And see how much better it makes you feel. It helps you breathe better, which brings me to the second biggest way you can change your physiology is through the way you breathe. Pay attention, especially if you're in traffic and it's a bit tense, you're gripping the wheel and you're breathing, it gets a little shallow. And if that's your case right now, pay attention to your breathing. Pay attention to the way you're breathing. Pay attention to how you feel. Good. Now that you have that, now let's take a few deep breaths. Real deep breath in. Keep going. Keep breathing in. Fill your lungs more. And then slowly exhale and do that a few more times and see how you feel. See how you feel different. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much different do you feel? On a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you, where were you before you took that breath? And then on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel after you do that breath? And the third biggest way you can change the way you feel through your physical body is what you eat. I mean, do you get hangry, right? That combination of hungry and angry that Snickers commercials has, like, you know, developed a whole line of commercials about? Or are you emotionally stable? Do you not feel the ups and downs just based on whether you've eaten or not? When you're hungry, you're like, oh, I need to eat. You're not like, I need to eat, okay? Give me some food before someone gets hurt. You know, are you one of those people? I used to be that way. In fact, my psychologist friend, established psychologist, okay, not just right out of school, was a friend of mine, actually a client at the time. And she told me, she's like, Ted, there's something really wrong with you. You should consider getting medication, some antidepressants, some mood stabilizing medication, because she would see me get upset. And it was just the way I was eating and some other things actually that were putting me in this situation. So do you have even energy throughout the day, or do you crash after lunch? Do you feel sluggish and have brain fog, or are you mentally clear? I mean, everybody talks about what you should eat for fat loss or keto or low fat, but hey, how about paying attention to the way your food choices make you feel? And of course, let's not forget the biggest way you can change the way you feel, or the fourth biggest way, is through how you sleep. Now, I put this one at the end, not because it's the least important, but I believe that the number one is exercise. Why? Because you can feel like crap. You can have a bad night of sleep. You can eat some food that isn't the best for you, but you can do some exercise and you will feel better. And it's incredible. And that's why exercise is the most powerful thing that you can master. And what I'm trying to tell you here is make sure you develop these things that you can do throughout the day, which is going to be much healthier for your body anyway. Because if you're one of the people right now who you mostly sit, you sit on your way to work in the car, you sit at work all day, you sit on your way back from work in the car or the bus or the whatever, and then you come home and you sit on the couch to rest from your hard day at sitting at work, using your, you know, of course you're mentally exhausted using all your mental energy, and you think you're working out maybe two or three or four or even five times a week in the gym is going to counteract that. It's not going to happen. So find some things that you can do throughout the day to get you going. Figure out what works for you and do that. But let's talk back about sleep, right? Do you wake up full of energy, or do you have to drink five cups of coffee to jolt yourself to alertness? Are you able to go through your day with power, or are you dragging ass, as we like to say? Or are you able to go to bed at night, or are you one of those people who are tired and wired? You're like, I'm tired, but I can't sleep because I'm also kind of wired. And do you wake up during the night because you have like fitful sleep because you're not deep sleeping deep? And of course, I'm not going to go into details about all these today because we're nearly at an hour right now, but I've done plenty of episodes on this, and you can search, you can go to the website, you can search for these things, you can take more action on them, you can experiment with things and see what works for you, you can put together your own personal plan of action. And what I want to tell you is, if you want me to help you do this, because I've been helping people with this for 20 years, then what I want you to do is I want you to go to legendarylifepodcast.com/talk. That's legendarylifepodcast.com/talk, and sign up for a breakthrough call. And I've talked about the calls on the past. We're going to go through everything. We're going to help you get clear on what's not working for you, what you need to do to keep to take things up to the next level. We'll talk about a bunch of things. We'll get you really clear. We'll get you fired up. And if afterward you and I think we're a good fit for each other for working together, then I'll invite you, if I believe you're a good fit, to work with me. But the call is free, and I can't tell you how much value that is. And I do that because I love helping people. And I also love giving back, because I know what it's like to maybe feel like you're a public success, but in private, you kind of feel like a failure. Like, everybody looks at how much money you have and how much you have going on for you, but you kind of feel like a loser. Or if you've been struggling with this stuff, if you've been struggling, like maybe you're like, man, no, I don't feel like that, but I need some help. I need some some assistance here because everyone needs a coach. That's why the best MMA fighters, the best football players, the best boxers, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather are going to fight in 2019 or the end of 2018. Those guys are the best in the world. They all have coaches and the best athletes. And why don't you have a coach? Because if you don't and you have the means for it, you're just saying to everyone, saying to yourself, I'm playing life small. Now, again, you don't have to sign up with me, but I'm offering you the coaching call to decide whether we're a good fit because I only work with certain type of people, coachable, committed, and people who show up ready to do the work. I'm just done after 20 years of working with people. I'm done with the people who make excuses and just don't put in the work. And that's unfortunately the majority of people. But if you're someone who fits that description, then go to legendarylifepodcast.com/talk and, you know, let's have a conversation and we'll go from there. Would love to help you get clear. All right, that's it for me. I hope you got a lot of value out of this. Remember, learn how to manage your state even when it gets hard. And this is what I tell people. You've got to be able to do it in the moments that test you. You can't walk through life like, oh, I just got a big raise today. I just signed up a new client. I just made a bunch of money. I just had an amazing date, or my wife or my husband did something amazing for me for our honeymoon. It's easy to go through life and be happy and full of energy and passion when things are going your way. That says nothing about you other than you are like everybody else. It's when you get tested that really matters. And I want you to ask yourself in those moments, are you stepping up or are you repeating those same negative cycles of behavior? You got to learn to break those. And once you do, I promise you, life is going to be amazing. That's all I've got. I hope you enjoyed this. Have an amazing week, and I'll speak to you soon.